Welcome back to another episode of A Galaxy Far, Far Away, the Star Wars History Podcast with me, John. First of all, I have some announcements. As the podcast continues to grow and develop and I get more followers, I have expanded the social media presence from just the regular website, swgalaxypodcast.com. There is now a Facebook page and an Instagram account to go with the podcast as well. You can access links to those social media websites from the website down in the bottom right corner of the main website page. I encourage all of my listeners to give those a follow if you use Facebook or Instagram. Those are going to be some additional great resources, not only to keep updated on how the podcast is coming along with new episodes and things like that, but also another way for us to interact with each other. Additionally, there is a forthcoming Patreon for the podcast as well. The social media accounts and the website will also keep you updated on how that is progressing. I'm expecting to be able to launch it in the next couple of weeks, probably. Thank you to everyone who already is following all the social media accounts. Please continue to spread the word to those you know who might be interested in following along as well. That is it for the housekeeping type items. Now we can move right back into the story. So we left off with learning about the Hutts, the history of their empire, the early days, and now we're going to learn about their nearest neighbors and a group that will find themselves in conflict with the Hutts off and on, and this will all come to a head at the Tyanese War with the Galactic Republic, and that is the peoples who inhabited the Tyon Cluster, which, looking at the map of the galaxy, is just north of Hutt space on the outer rim, the northeastern corner of the galaxy. We're going to learn the history and background of these Tyanese people, and more specifically, one Tyanese individual, Zim the Despot. This is Episode 8, Invader Zim. The Tyon Cluster began to be populated by the Tyanese people back around 27,000 BBY. The colonists of the Tyon Cluster originally came from the core world of Coruscant. While there is no definitive evidence in the canon or the legends of Star Wars, it is believed that humans originated on Coruscant and then spread throughout the galaxy from there. This was back before they had developed hyperspace technology, and so the means by which the humans from Coruscant colonized other worlds, including the worlds of the Tyon Cluster out in the Outer Rim, was the use of sleeper ships. Sleeper ships, as the name suggests, worked by putting the colonists inside to sleep or into suspended animation so that they could travel vast interstellar distances that take a long period of time without them really noticing the passage of time because they are not conscious. We get a glimpse into this technology in the movie The Empire Strikes Back when Han Solo is trapped in carbonite because carbonite freezing was the way in which the sleeper ships would transport their passengers in a way to preserve their lives for much longer than your typical lifespan. So this is basically the Star Wars version of cryogenics, keeping the body preserved for a longer period of time, and then being able to reawaken them when the colony ship reaches its final destination. So the humans of Coruscant sent out these sleeper ships to colonize worlds throughout the core and the outer rim, and some of these ships went out to the Tyon Cluster, and this is where the Tainese people originated. The Tainese people are humans as well. Because of the distance of the Tayon cluster out in the Outer Rim, far removed from the other inhabited core worlds, and the still lack of hyperdrive technology, the Tainese people developed their society in relative isolation. They colonized all of the local worlds, but were really unable to contact anyone outside of their immediate realm of space as they developed over the next couple thousand years. Within the Tayon cluster, a number of different political entities developed, again, because it was very difficult for them to travel far distances quickly because of their lack of hyperspace technology at the time. And so three different political factions developed in different areas of this star cluster. These three political entities were the Kingdom of Kron, the Kingdom of Barseg, both of them were monarchies, and then the Livian League, which was a confederacy of planets. These three independent groups developed and coexisted with each other for about 2,000 years. The Kingdom of Kron was the largest and most powerful of these political groups, large enough for an ambitious individual to begin carving their own kingdom out of a piece of it. Around the year 25,150, a pirate named Xur began expanding outwards from his homeworld of Argai, which was within the Kingdom of Kron. With the force of his pirate army at his back and the wealth he was acquiring for himself through his piracy, he was able to slowly claim territory permanently for his own and begin to carve out his little kingdom. He called this the Kingdom of Argai, named after his home planet, which he made the capital of this new kingdom. Pretty rapidly, Xur's new kingdom grew to a point of being a threat to the Kingdom of Kron. The King of Kron at the time, a man named Ferris, tried to persuade Xur to swear an oath of fealty to absorb this new kingdom into the Kingdom of Kron. Basically, Ferris was like, hey, you can keep your kingdom as long as you acknowledge that I'm your overlord and you're just a small part of this greater kingdom, and probably have to pay tribute to the King of Kron, Ferris, as well. Xur told the king, sure, I'll give you a tribute, but I need to gather a suitable tribute for a king like you. So give me a month, I'll come back with a great tribute and swear my oath of fealty to you as my king. However, Xur believed Ferris to be a weak ruler. He believed his court was weak. He was pretty insulted by the idea that he should swear fealty when, in his mind, Ferris was weak and the weak one should submit to the strong. So what did he actually do over the next month when he was supposedly collecting a tribute? He was, of course, gathering an army to launch a surprise invasion of the capital planet of the Kingdom of Kron. Xur's suspicion about Ferris' weakness was confirmed when the battle was over quickly. Ferris and his court, pretty much taken completely by surprise, just ran away. This allowed Xur to proclaim himself King of Kron, changing his name from Xur the Pirate to Xur the Eighth. Because, of course, every good king needs some Roman numerals after his name. Over the next 20 years, Xur carried out a campaign of expansionism throughout the rest of the Tayon cluster. He conquered the Kingdom of Barseg and explored and conquered all of the previously uncharted areas of the Tayon cluster as well. However, Xur was unable to completely subjugate the entire Tayon cluster. The Confederation of the Livian League was successfully able to defy Xur, hold him at bay with their own military might, defeating him twice in battle and forcing him to essentially end his campaign of expansion. Xur spent the remainder of his rule consolidating his conquests, focusing on internal affairs, building up an efficiently run empire, and preparing to hand it over to his son and heir, Zim. Zim first made a name for himself as a warlord in his father's army. One of the first moves that Xur made after capturing the capital of the Kingdom of Kron was to eliminate any nobles who might challenge his authority and rule. Zim was particularly effective and ruthless in carrying out his father's ambitions in this regard. Zim quickly gained a reputation for being ruthless and brutal. When Xur stepped down and handed over rule of the Kingdom of Kron to his son Zim, Zim recommenced the conquest that his father had taken a break from. He first set his sights on the Livian League, the one portion of the Tyan cluster his father was not able to subjugate. There's no information as to why Zim was able to defeat the Livian League when his father was not. All we know is that at the planet Jantoria within the Livian League, Zim was able to crush the forces of the League in a decisive victory, forcing them to surrender. Zim's first inclination was to completely destroy the League's capital planet of Decevro as punishment for defying his father. But the military ruler of the planet was able to convince Zim to spare them and to incorporate the League peacefully into his empire. Zim was given a tour of the planet's fighting academies where they trained extensively their entire military force, as well as showing them how their bureaucracy worked very efficiently. Zim realized that adopting these practices of the League would be a much greater benefit to his lasting empire. Zim also made moves to stamp out any potential rivals and solidify his claim to control all of the Tyan cluster. He was able to track down and kill the exiled King Ferris of Kron in order to recover the crown of Kron that Ferris had taken with him into exile. He also killed his four half-brothers, as well as killing his own father, Xur the Eighth himself. And with no rival claims left to the throne, he declared himself emperor. Interestingly, he used the Rakata word for emperor, which is Daritha, and it is believed that the Sith title of Darth stems from this word as well. At this point, Zim began his expansion out of his local star cluster and into unexplored space. Zim was able to equip his army with all of the best technology available at the time, especially considering the relative isolation that many of the Outer Rim worlds he ended up conquering lived in. The bulk of his army was actually made up of one of the earliest forms of battle droids, rather than actual living soldiers. These droids were known as the Guardian Corps, and in addition to being physically imposing, large, heavily armed and armored, they had one of the primary positive benefits to an army of droids, and that is they had no human emotions to hinder them, no fear or pain to slow them down. I'm going to put some images and diagram of these battle droids up on the website for you to check out. The majority of these droids were relatively mindless and were pretty much controlled in bulk, not on an individual level. However, there were some variants of them, including a model called the Core Commanders, which were designed with a little more independence, and so they were able to act a little more effectively in smaller groups. Over a relatively short period of time, Zim was able to more than double the size of his father's empire, stretching all the way from the Radama Void, which is a gap in the two spiral arms of the galaxy, to the Maw. The Maw is a cluster of nebulae and black holes surrounding the planet Kessel. We have heard of Kessel before. If you remember Han Solo's boast in the original Star Wars movie of making the Kessel run in less than 12 parsecs, or if you have seen the Solo Star Wars Story movie where he makes that Kessel Run. However, for that movie, they called the entire group of nebulae the Akkadee's Maelstrom, and then referred to the Maw as just being the one super black hole that they almost get sucked into. I'll put some maps up on the website so you obviously can get a better idea, if you want, of geographically where everything is located. The important thing is that the Maw and the planet Kessel are right on the edge of Hutt space. And as Zim is expanding his empire, this is where he finally runs up against some real opposition in his conquests. Because as we discussed in episode 6, the Hutt Empire was growing more powerful at the same time that Zim's empire was. And they sort of just collide with each other at this point. In the interest of avoiding all of us getting way too confused about all of these different characters and wars and battles, we won't be getting to the war between Zim and the Hutts in this episode. I will cover that conflict and its effects on both the Hutts and the Tyanis in its own episode. But before this episode wraps up, I want to talk a little bit more about the behind the scenes of Zim. The first and primary mention of Zim comes from a book written in 1980 called Han Solo and the Lost Legacy. In the book, Han and Chewbacca are on the hunt for a lost treasure ship of Zim's empire called the Queen of Ranrun. Legend held that a vast amount of wealth from Zim's empire was on this ship that was lost on its way to his treasure vaults. As it turned out, the wealth was primarily in the form of technology. So again, Zim had highly advanced technology for his time, but by the time of Han Solo's discovering of it, it was very much obsolete, pretty much worthless, so the treasure ship was a big bust. The emblem of Zim's army is called the Death Head. It's basically a minimalist depiction of a skull. This insignia was emblazoned on all of his battle droids, and this probably also came from the book Han Solo and the Lost Legacy. On the cover of that book is the image of a crystal skull, which supposedly was set at the masthead, or the highest point of the mast, on his flagship as his emblem, and it was made from something called Maitag crystal, which was highly valued at the time of his empire, but again was one of those things that became worthless over time. We do see this crystal skull, however, pop up in film. I am thankfully not talking about Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. It shows up in the Han Solo movie. In the ship of the main bad guy, Dryden Voss, you can spot this crystal skull in his collection that is supposed to be Zim's crystal skull itself. The rest of the information on Zim and the Tyon Cluster's history comes from a series of articles that were originally published on the official Star Wars website, but are no longer available there, and then were subsequently published in the Star Wars Essential Atlas Online Companion. These articles were written in 2009, so before Disney purchased Star Wars, so technically not canon, but as I have said before, I think everything is canon unless it is explicitly contradicted or refuted by any of the new stuff. And the fact that Disney included Zim's masthead in the Han Solo movie, I think, is enough of a reason to consider all of this to be canon. So, quick recap of what we covered in this episode, since it was potentially confusing, I think. Humans from the core planet of Coruscant colonized an outer rim star cluster called the Tyon Cluster. Multiple political entities formed, the largest being the Kingdom of Kron. Eventually, a pirate warlord named Xur overthrew the king, became king himself, conquered a majority of the rest of the Tyon Cluster, and then was succeeded by his son, Zim the Despot, who killed his father and brothers, conquered the last remaining portion of the Tion Cluster, and then drastically expanded using advanced technology until he ran into the equally powerful empire of the Hutts. I've decided that I'm going to try and keep the episodes to be a little bit more short and give you a little bit more digestible pieces of information. Also, this will enable me to, I think, produce episodes more frequently, hopefully once a week, actually. And again, I am welcome to feedback from you listeners via email or the website or social media. Now I have a whole handful of ways for you to get in touch with me and give me your feedback. Thank you again for listening and for all of your support. Again, keep on the lookout for the forthcoming Patreon. It should be launched very soon in the next week or so. I'll make announcements regarding that everywhere on the website, on social media, with my voice in an episode to make sure that everyone knows when that happens. And with that, I will talk at you next time, and may the Force be with you.